And now I'm going to read a formal talk from the same person, Ajahn Anand. And this is from the last talk in a book titled Seeking Buddha. It's available for free distribution and for free online. I mention this also because I'll only be able to read the beginning and the end, because it's quite a long talk. And I'll start with the introduction. Keeping the end in mind. This is an abridged version of a farewell Dhamma Desana delivered by Venerable Ajahn Anand at Wat Pha Krom, Chittabawanaram, Lamluka, Pathum Thani, in November 1984, as he prepared to depart to continue his practice in Rayong province, at what would later become his present-day residence of Wat Mok Jan. In the course of this talk, Ajahn Anand offers the details of his practice as a gift of Dhamma to gladden and inspire all those who had provided support during the years he spent practicing at Wat Pha Krom. Today, with the permission of Venerable Ajahn Piak and my friends in Dhamma, the time has come for me to speak about Dhamma practice, in the course of which there will be much food for thought to bring into your own practice of meditation. Therefore, let us all be determined to firmly compose the mind, to make it calm and peaceful by trying to focus upon the in and out breathing. Meditate feeling content and at ease, allowing the breathing to be comfortable and relaxed. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Having this opportunity to meet here today is because of our interest in Dhamma and our attempt to practice meditation in accordance with the advice and instruction of the Lord Buddha. Today, then, is a good opportunity for me to speak the truth about my own practice. Today seems the right occasion to speak because, for all of us to be sitting here, having lived this far, is indeed a rarity. Perhaps next year, or in the years ahead, we will not have the chance to meet together or see each other again. This or that person may have left us, some to other places, some because old age prevents them from coming, and some because of death. Therefore, the Buddha taught us that our lives are uncertain. Death is for sure. It is certain we must die. Our lives will end in death. When we foresee the danger in life's uncertainty, we become one who is heedful. The Buddha stated that the one who is heedful never dies. Appamado amata padang, pamado matruno padang. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The one who is heedless is dead already. Such people, although still alive and sitting, standing, or walking, are said to have already died because they are dead to virtue and to goodness, to merit and to that which is wholesome. However, all of us sitting here can be described as heedful, trying to be interested and attentive in the practice of Dhamma that will brighten, cleanse, and purify our hearts in accordance with our efforts. Death, therefore, can become a wellspring of Dhamma. The Buddha informed us that the mind of one who frequently contemplates death will become heedful of the truth, recollecting the impermanence, suffering, and selflessness of this body. Just this subject of death, then, can become a basis for our meditation, a foundation for our practice that we cannot overlook. If we frequently practice Maranānusati, contemplating death as a meditation theme, our minds will become heedful of life's uncertainty and the certainty of death. We have to die for sure. This life will end in death. Some people, after conception, die in the womb. Others pass away after a couple of months or a couple of years, or after reaching the age of 10 or 20. This we can observe for ourselves. Our human lifespan, therefore, is uncertain. Some die young, and others die old. If we contemplate death in this way, then whatever power and prestige one may possess, whatever riches, rank, and renown, whether a prince or a pauper, a beggar or a billionaire, even great and mighty kings, we can see that death grants no exemptions. Even our supremely enlightened Lord Buddha, the Mahaparisa, the champion of the world, the refuge of all beings, fully endowed with the virtues of wisdom, great compassion, moral discipline, and absolute purity, even the life of that sublime one's body was crushed by death. Will we then, as ordinary people not yet possessing the wisdom, purity, power, and might of a Buddha, escape death and the danger inherent in death? Will we not have to be parted from all that we love and delight in? I myself will not escape death. It is beyond the ability of anyone. I consider my life to be uncertain, whereas death is a certainty. Consequently, everyone in this world is in the same predicament. Nobody can escape from death. Death will envelop us all, ending in separation from everything we love and cherish. All our wealth and possessions are gained with great difficulty. Some people amass a great stash, but are afraid to put it to use, whereas others are thrifty misers and hoard their wealth away. When they pass on, these goods and riches are unable to bring them any benefits. Why do we act like this? Because, like children playing in the garden as a blazing fire approaches, we do not yet see the danger closing in. Most of us are like these children having fun and frolics. We are unaware of the threat, unaware of the danger closing in, creeping slowly, relentlessly, upon us, second by second, minute by minute. That is, old age, sickness, and death. In the end, death comes to separate us from our bodies. However, it does not just part us from our own bodies. It also parts us from our children and spouses, our parents and relatives. Death separates and takes away that which we most love. How is it possible that death can take these things away from us? For the reason that these things are not within our power to control. Separation through death is a natural law. The law of death is a force of nature. After hearing the teaching of the Buddha, Venerable Anyakondanya saw the truth because he understood how all things naturally arise and pass away. The meaning of all things here is everything that exists, everything that is subject to the conditions of impermanent suffering and not self. Where no self or soul or person or being or me or you can be found. Venerable Anyakondanya saw his body as impermanent suffering and not self, as arising and ceasing, as being without a being. When one understands these natural conditions, as did Anyakondanya, it is called attaining the vision of Dhamma. That is, he saw the physical body according to reality. When the world is seen according to reality, the vision of Dhamma arises. This is a profound transformation. The heart is transformed from that of an ordinary person. It changes from a Kalyana jhana to an Arya jhana, from just simply a good person to a noble one. When the Dhamma is seen, it is just this Dhamma which makes the heart noble. How is it that the heart becomes noble by seeing the Dhamma? It is because of being heedful, like Venerable Anyakondanya. Before the Buddha's enlightenment, Venerable Kondanya was diligent in serving and ministering to the Bodhisattva for 6 years. However, after he saw the Buddha-to-be partake of nourishing food, Venerable Kondanya shunned him and ran away, believing it unlikely that the Buddha would attain to any lofty spiritual realization. Although Venerable Kondanya renounced the Bodhisattva, he did not abandon his own practice. He was possessed of faith, and having already put forth effort to build and perfect spiritual qualities, he realized that by continuing to cultivate Dhamma in this way, his heart would likely gain a firm spiritual foundation, a natural source of confidence and purity. Therefore, I would like to encourage you all to thoroughly investigate this subject of death. The contemplation of death, skillfully cultivated as a basic meditation practice, naturally brings many benefits. All anxiety, worry, and worldly concerns will inevitably be eliminated from our hearts as a matter of course. For this reason, then, we should all put forth effort in our meditation and try to make the investigation and contemplation of death firm in our minds. Try to develop this meditation as much as possible, investigating with determination and resolution for the sake of results. Sometimes, during our investigation of death, the heart experiences sudden flashes of Sangvega, a profound sadness, with the sobering insight that life is uncertain, and that if we are destined to die, then nothing is worth clinging on to. With the arising of Sangvega in the heart like this, it can be said that our contemplation of the meditation theme is correct and proper. If our mind experiences sudden moments of calm, which then turns into wayward thinking, this shows that the mind is concentrated to the level of Kanika Samadhi. If the calm in the mind goes deeper than this, which, when applied to the contemplation of the meditation theme, arouses feelings of Sangvega and spiritual rapture, the Sangvega arising only momentarily leaving behind an experience of deep bliss, peace, and serenity, then this indicates that the mind is entering upon Upachara Samadhi. This is a Samadhi which is almost solid, sustained for long periods of time, and where body and mind are light and tranquil. If we use our minds to frequently contemplate in this way, then solid concentration will arise as a matter of course. This can be called cultivating wisdom to develop samadhi. That is to say, we contemplate using the mind to see impermanence, suffering, and not self, to see that this body will have to die. To arouse the theme of death in the mind, we must use our memory of those things we have heard and remembered to guide our contemplation. As the mind converges, it gradually calms down, advancing in stages from Kanika Samadhi to Upachara Samadhi. As proficiency in Samadhi increases, the contemplation of death becomes more skillful and effortless accordingly. In my own practice, I used Maranānusati, the contemplation of death, as my first basic theme of meditation. I made an effort to recollect death all the time. For example, sometimes I would watch children playing football, observing their delight in the world and their experience of pleasant, desirable moods. I would reflect, these our bodies cannot be taken for granted. Do these people who come looking for entertainment and distraction realize that death is creeping up on them? I too am no exception. If I could die right now, or at any moment, then why do I allow myself to seek only delight and distraction in the world? When I opened a newspaper and saw the daily announcements that this or that person had died, and that the funeral chanting would be conducted in such a monastery at such and such a time, then I would reflect that these people, although of rank, fame, and fortune, they still had to meet with death and disaster. Previously, they were alive just as I am now, and in the end, like them, I naturally will have to die. Contemplating in this way, the mind became calm and Sangvega arose. This is called making an effort to develop the recollection of death as a basic meditation practice. In my practice, I continually put forth effort to develop the meditation on death. For the first 4 years, I was still developing the contemplation of death as my main theme of meditation. So now I'll go to the end in the interest of time, but he goes in quite a lot of detail through the progression of his practice. So this is the conclusion. In as much of my practice as I have related here, in conclusion, it is enough to say that I put forth effort, keeping a solid foundation in sila. As a layman, I practice generosity. I would consider, my life is uncertain, whereas death is a certainty. I surely will have to die. My life will end in death. If death is coming, then what's the point of amassing wealth and possessions? Regardless of how much I make plans to save or become self-made and secure, life is uncertain. Sometimes the money and assets that I have sought out are not even put to use. Consequently, I tried to practice dana and establish myself in this quality of generosity and self-sacrifice. I gave freely of my resources on a regular basis until one day I asked myself why I was working, considering I gave most of my monthly wage away as gifts or offerings, using only the little that remained to support myself. I reflected, what's the reason for working if I give away all that I make? It's better I ordain and seek freedom from suffering. I put forth effort in practicing generosity to establish myself in noble spiritual qualities. When I performed deeds of generosity, gradually the heart became more self-sacrificing, and the power of selfish greed was restrained. Consequently, my heart conceived the wish to ordain. I no longer want to earn a living. A worldly person would call such individuals feeble, labeling them as life's losers. However, for those following the way of Dhamma, such wishes and wants are called seeing the danger in the cycle of death and rebirth. The danger is seen in that, although our good deeds lead on to goodness, acts of evil plunge us down the abyss to a hellish birth, becoming animals, demons, or hungry ghosts, where there is a total suffering and misery. Consequently, not taking birth is more favorable. It is better to seek freedom from suffering, to strive in the quest for liberation. I will soon be traveling to Rayong province and will probably take up residence there. As a monk and a samana, refraining from the pursuit of wealth, I have nothing except the Dhamma teachings of the Lord Buddha and my own practice of meditation with which to repay the kindness of all the lay supporters here at Lamluka. Every one of you faithful devotees has always made your best effort to attentively support the monks and novices. If I had not sincerely practiced, it is likely I would be unable to repay this karmic debt. Initially in my practice, aware of this indebtedness, I was wary and apprehensive when I saw faithful supporters bringing the four requisites to offer. However, I tried hard practicing to make myself noble and worthy so that all my supporters would find peace and contentment. Consequently, seeing the faith of all the lay supporters here at Lamluka, I rejoice in your goodness and in your wholesome aspirations. Finally, may the power of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha aid and assist all of you sitting here and all those who come to make merit here at Lamluka. May your hearts be calm and serene, firm in samadhi, shining bright. May you all abandon evil, do that which is good, and purify the heart, freeing it from suffering and arousing the vision of Dhamma.